Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Bhagavata Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Jai Gopriman.
So, what do we discuss last time now? Bhakti Vedanta course. Anything else?
Importance of changing the nature. So this kind this was when king performed some tests, so process for this region and to the case, you know. Case and kitchen of by 10 meters.
Good. Any other points?
Children have got obligations to parents and so the Vedic culture is based on love relationship. So anything bounds in a family is based on love, and ISKCON will also be based on love and trust. So that is more important for anything to be for that to come.
Any other points? So tonight we'll continue with chapter 21, and we'll hear about the pastime of Maharaj. Specifically, who was spoken about in the beginning of the chapter 21? Chapter 21, we hear about the pastime of Maharaj. Runti Day. Yeah, this will be described. Joining us. Almost forgot what you look like. Making a comeback. Huh?
I read your email yesterday.
Good. So, we'll have a talk soon. Okay. Shukadev Goswami said, Maharaj Bharadwaj was delivered by the Marut demigods. He was known as Vitata. The son of Vitata was Manu. And from Manu came five sons, Brihat Kshatra, Jaya, Mahavirya, Nara, and Garga. Of these five, the one known as Nara had a son named Sankriti. O Maharaj Pariksha, descendant of Pandu, Sankriti had two sons named Guru and Runtidev. Runtidev is famous in both this world and the next, for he is glorified not only in human society, but also in the society of the demigods. Runtidev never endeavored to earn anything. He would enjoy whatever he got by the arrangement of providence. But when guests came, he would give them everything. Thus he underwent considerable suffering, along with the members of his family. Indeed, he and his family members shivered for want of food and water, yet Runtidev always remained sober. Once, after fasting for 48 days, in the morning Runtidev received some water and some foodstuffs, made with milk and ghee. But when he and his family were about to eat, a Brahmana guest arrived. So, it is described that Runtidev was dependent upon providence. Providence means fate or destiny, And for a devotee, that means Krishna's mercy. The devotee, it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his description of Sharanagati. Sharanagati means self-surrender, to be surrendered unto Krishna. So, there are six principles of Sharanagati, and these are described by Prabhupada in the purport for Sava Dhamman Purichaja, Mami Kam Sharanam Brita. When describing Sharana means surrender to Krishna, then Prabhupada mentions in the purport, quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and if we go further back, these things are mentioned by the Goswamis. There are certain elements which must be there in surrender for a devotee. To be surrendered to Krishna, the first two elements is that one must feel that Krishna is one's protector, and one must feel that Krishna is one's maintainer. That is surrender. We think that Krishna will maintain us, and Krishna will protect us under all circumstances. So, devotional service, it takes time to become completely pure. We are on the path of bhakti, which means we're going from the platform of Shraddha to prema. So when you have prema, then you feel completely protected by Krishna and completely maintained by Krishna. But on our level, it is still a mixed amount of faith that we have in Krishna. We do not have complete faith in Krishna. So we believe that Krishna will maintain us, Krishna will protect us, to whatever degree that we are surrendered to Krishna. So Maharaj Rantidev was showing complete surrender to Krishna. He understood that Krishna will maintain him under all circumstances. So when we become advanced in Krishna consciousness, we will also have that consciousness, that Krishna will maintain us under all circumstances. And as devotees, we know that that is completely possible, because we feel that Krishna is, Prabhupada describes Krishna as like the Father, in one sense. We see him as being our Father. The Father always makes sure that all the children are maintained. There is no hunger, there is no need for anything. Everything is given by the Father. So for a devotee, it feels like he has everything necessary in devotional service. So all of us have that experience. When you join ISKCON, all of your necessities are taken care of. Have you ever been hungry since you became a Hare Krishna devotee? No. Is there anything, any such thing as hunger in the Hare Krishna movement? No. That's the problem. That's why everyone is sick. Just like Prabhupada, when he first took the devotees to India, they all got sick. And they were spending lots of money on medicine. So then when they came to Prabhupada, and they said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm feeling sick, I need money for medicine," Prabhupada said, "First you fast for 3 days. And if you fast for 3 days, and then you're still sick, then I will give you
medicine.
Money. And you can buy some medicine." But the point is, most devotees get sick because they just eat too much. And all the devotees are always complaining, "I have this problem, I have that problem." But the problem is just being caused by overeating, basically. That's basically it. And if you analyze the health epidemic or the sickness or the disease epidemic which is there in the world these days, like people have type 2 diabetes and heart conditions and cancer and all these things, most of it is just going back to what they eat. It's just their diet. If you eat properly, practically you won't get those things. Under most circumstances. Sometimes you'll get sick anyway, but generally, it's just coming because people do not eat properly. So Krishna maintains us. But just because he maintains us nicely doesn't mean we have to eat everything that we're given. We have to still have some discrimination. So Maharaj Rantidev, he felt completely dependent on Krishna. And so much so that everything that he received, he distributed that back to others. And actually, Prabhupada was the same. Srila Prabhupada said that if I get $1 million today in the morning, I will spend it by the evening, and then tomorrow, if we get another $1 million, we'll spend that by the next evening. So that is the way a devotee thinks. He thinks that whatever Krishna gives me, then I will use that in his service, and then Krishna will provide more. And then there is no lacking. So the devotee does not hanker or lament that he does not have enough. Everything will be given by Krishna. So see, Ranti Dev shows, these examples are given in the Bhagavatam to show us how we should become. But we cannot imitate these things. You see what Ranti Dev does. What Ranti Dev does, I cannot do. Yeah, I mean, it's not even anyone in this country. Yeah, not even our most advanced devotees in this country do this kind of thing. I mean, for a start, he hasn't eaten for 48 days. You can't even stop eating for 48 hours. You can't even stop eating for 48 minutes. Devotees cannot do this kind of austerities. But Ranti Dev, this is like another level of consciousness. That he can do that, and then whatever he gets, he still gives it to him. So this is just showing the principle. So what is the principle that we should have? The principle that we should take is that we should depend on Krishna. And then, after depending on Krishna, we should maintain others. That is the basic principle. We can't do what he does, but at least we should take the principle and practice. Any points? Where's the problem?
Apply this.
He loves them more than me.
How do we apply these principles in the previous world?
Means?
What is called the world? What's the conditions to apply these principles?
Well, we just have to do it as much as we can to our level of advancement. It means we have to depend on Krishna. That's the principle. Mm-hmm. So at least depend on Krishna. And as Ranti Dev is doing it, he's giving whatever he can to others, to maintain others. So we should also do that. We should make sure the other devotees are satisfied and comfortable. Like that. Should be our responsibility. Because, like, you know, if some devotee is sick or they're not well or some problem happens, you bring them into your home, you look after them, like that. So at least we learn to do like that. We can't do like Ranti Dev is that level. But. Any other point? Because Ranti Dev perceived the presence of the Supreme Godhead everywhere, and in every living entity, he received the guest with faith and respect and gave him a share of the food. The Brahmana guest ate his share and then went away. Uddhava Bandhu.
Antideva perceived the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being, but he never thought that it was the Supreme Lord is present in every living being. Every living being must be God. Nor did he distinguish between one living being and another. He perceived the presence of the Lord both in the Brahmana and in the Chandala. This is the true vision of equality, as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 5.19. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. A learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater of castes. A Pandita, or learned person, perceives the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being. Therefore, although it has now become fashionable to give preference to the so-called Dalitra Narayana or Puva Narayana, Pandideva had no reason to give preference to any one person. The idea that because Narayana is present in the heart of one who is the Dalitra or Puva, the poor man should be called Dalitra Narayana is a wrong conception. By such logic, because the Lord is present within the hearts of the dogs and hawks, dogs and hawks would also be Narayana. One should not mistakenly think that Ranti Deva subscribed to this view. Father, he saw everyone as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is Sambandhi. It's not that everyone is Supreme Godhead. Satya theory, which is propounded by the Mayavada philosophy, is always misleading. And Randi Deva would never have accepted it. So what are the points?
We should not consider that the poor man is there in the line. We should see that Krishna is there in everybody's heart.
Good. Anything else?
Because at this point, another equation comes. So this there is our emphasis on that compassion to my own wish.
Anything else? So this is the basic teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. It's the basic teaching of Krishna and the Gita. The Gita is 700 verses, and the Bhagavad Gita is an elaboration upon the Gita. So all the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita is elaborated upon in the Bhagavad Gita. So in the fifth chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Pandit Samadarshana, Samadarshan, which means equal vision. And then it is described that in the Bhagavad Gita, we have the example of Samadarshan in the example of Rantideva, as an example. Rantideva is showing how we should see all living entities equally. So the Gita will teach us the principle, the Bhagavad Gita will explain it through philosophy and example and pastime. So we see that Rantideva is showing us how to properly view a Now, if it's going to be successful, we have to embrace this teaching, because this is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Mahaprabhu's teachings were all based upon the Bhagavad Gita. Now, how did Lord Chaitanya see all the living entities? He saw them all as being equal. He did not differentiate. We see the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, just like when he was in the forest of Jarikunda, when he was walking from Puri to Vrindavan. He passed through that forest. Have you ever taken the train from Puri to Vrindavan? Have you got the train across? You go from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan. It takes maybe like 36 hours or so. And you pass through Jarikunda, not through the forest. It doesn't look like when Lord Chaitanya was there. But still, there's a little bit of forest there. But you go through that place. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went through there, then he saw all the living entities as completely equal. And he was giving mercy even to the animals. Okay. So we should also be like that. We should also have that consciousness. It describes that when the great sacrifices were performed by Yudhishthira, Rajasuya sacrifice and Ashwamedha, the very big sacrifices, Yudhishthira, he made sure that everyone was fed at the end of the sacrifice. So the Brahmins were fed first, and then the different powers, and then the different people in society. And then specifically mentions that he made sure the animals were fed. And it actually specifically mentions, he said, it made sure the dogs were fed. So actually, that's proper vision. Now, proper vision means no one will go hungry. Prabhupada actually says that if you have a snake living in your house, you have to feed the snake. You have to make sure it doesn't go hungry. Of course, it depends what sort of snake it is. You know, if it's a python, that's different. But if it's a cobra, then you may treat it differently. Just like at the farm, then we treat the snakes differently. Mm-hmm. Up at the other farm, the Wollumbah, they get the pythons. They're harmless, really. You know, they're just like
you know, maybe a couple of meters long, and they go around very slow, and they don't harm the humans generally. But then the other snakes, they're dangerous, and you may have to deal with them differently. But the principle is that no one should go hungry. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also showed us that example. He said, everyone in your house, he said, even if the insects, you should be compassionate upon them. Prabhupada showed this example in his pastimes. Just like one time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj went into, they were staying somewhere, and there was one kitchen. So he went in there, and there were lots of mosquitoes. So before they started the cooking, then he was killing the mosquitoes. And then later he went and told Prabhupada. And he said to Prabhupada, I went in to do the cooking, and the mosquitoes there, so I was killing them. Prabhupada said, no, you should not kill them. He said, if they attack you, then you can kill them. Because it says in the Shastra that someone attacks you with a pointed weapon or comes with you with a sword or the mosquito bites you, then you can attack. Then you can defend yourself. But if they're just flying around, then you should not disturb. So Prabhupada, there are many examples in these pastimes. One time the devotees went for a morning walk with Prabhupada in the zoo. So as they're going through the zoo, then the devotees came to the lion's cage. So devotees were teasing the lion. It's easy to tease the lion when he's on the other side of the... They just say whatever you want. But if he's on this side, then you'll treat him differently. So devotees were teasing. And then Prabhupada said, do not tease him. Prabhupada said, do not tease him. Because Prabhupada was seen differently. He's a living entity. And you're just teasing because you're on this side. If you're on the other side, it's a totally different story. Did you see on the YouTube, you saw that man in India, he fell into the tiger's cage? He
was
Yeah, he was praying. Don't eat me. And the tiger actually wasn't eating him. Isn't it? He wasn't eating him. Then the people outside the cage, they're throwing stones at the tiger to try to get him. And then the tiger got annoyed. Yeah, because they're throwing the stones, he got upset, so he just grabbed him. Just threw him and took him away.
Instead of throwing the rope at him. They were trying to hit the tiger.
Yeah.
He wasted so much time. I mean, he just needed a rope to climb up.
Yeah, I don't think he was going to get out on a rope.
Right.
The tiger was this far away from him. Yeah.
But he wasn't attacking him in that video.
He wasn't attacking, but if he had tried to escape, the tiger might have grabbed. But the point is, the Prabhupada, when he was with those, he wasn't antagonistic. He was protecting them. Also, you read that in 69 or like that. Then, Srila Prabhupada, he was staying at John Lennon's estate, which was called Tittenhurst in England. So John Lennon had a big house. So he let the devotees stay there. Prabhupada stayed there for some time, maybe some weeks, Prabhupada was there. So every day, Prabhupada would go for a walk around the gardens. And there were many trees. And then the day that Prabhupada left the estate, then Prabhupada said, I have to go and say goodbye to some friends. So he walked around the garden where he'd walk every day, and he was touching the trees as he was walking around. And Prabhupada was saying goodbye to them because he was about to leave. So that's how Prabhupada saw. He saw all the looking at, and actually when he was in Dallas, he came to the Dallas temple, Gurukul. And when he came there, there was a tree, and it was growing right next to the building, the temple building, or the school building. And then when Prabhupada came back 6 months later, the devotees had cut the tree down. And Prabhupada said, where is that tree? And the devotees said, oh, Prabhupada, we cut it down because it's too close to the house. He said, no, we should cut you down. He said, he has a right to live. And you see in India quite often they build around the trees. Yeah, you see in India quite often they build, go around the tree, or they build the building around, or like that. In the West, we just cut it down.
In the Jew temple, we've got a big tree in the center.
In the Jew?
Yeah. And so that we don't cut the tree, build around. So in the center of the temple, in the courtyard, there's a big tree.
Big tree. Yeah. So, yeah, and that, devotees in the West, we just cut them down. Mm-hmm. I see devotees at the farm sometimes, they just cut the trees down for no reason. Yeah, and then I come and I say, why did you cut it down? And I said, oh, it was in the way. Actually, that was not Prabhupada's mood. I mean, it's for something very important. Like in Mayapur, they have to build a big temple, so they have to remove certain trees like that. But that's, you know, I mean, it's not that Prabhupada was fanatical, but at the same time, if it was unnecessary, Prabhupada would show us the example. Also, in the Krishna Balaram temple, he had the tamal tree in the temple courtyard, it's still there. That one died, but now there's another tree. So Prabhupada was like that. So these are many examples which Srila Prabhupada was showing us, based on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, based on the teachings of the Bhagavatam, that we should be Pandit Samadarshan, we should show respect to every living entity. When Prabhupada came to Melbourne, he went to Yarra Glen, and they had one monastery there. What was the monastery's name? I can't remember the name. Certain type of Christian monks. They live out there. So Prabhupada went there. It takes about a bit over an hour to get there from here. So Prabhupada went there, and Prabhupada was speaking, and he was speaking about this point, that we should see all the living entities properly. And then they said that there was St. Francis of Assisi. St. Francis of Assisi was a great Christian saint who lived in Italy a number of years ago, hundreds of years ago. He was very famous. And he would write, based on the teachings of Lord Jesus, he would write, Brother Wind and Sister Earth. And he would write all these things in his writings. So he saw even the elements, the wind and the sun and the rain, he saw them all as being personified. And they said to Prabhupada, what do you think of this? This is how the way our guru, St. Francis, the way he wrote. Prabhupada said, this is actual Krishna consciousness. He said, it's God consciousness. He said, this is real God consciousness. You know, not that you say, I believe in God, but that you just kill every animal and everything like that. It means that if you believe in God and you worship God, then you must also respect God's children. And who are God's children? Every living entity. 8,400,000 species of life, and all of them are sacred. Mahimshat Sabhabhutani, Prabhupada quotes in the Gita in one purport in the second chapter. He said that Mahimshat, Ahimsa, means you should not commit violence to any living entity unnecessarily. That's Krishna consciousness. So if there's not a need to kill something, then do not kill it. If you cannot create life, you should not take life. That is the basic principle of the Bhagavatam. So Runti Dave is showing us this perfect example. And Srila Prabhupada, he showed us this perfect example in many, many ways in his pastimes. Any point?
I remember that Shushikirti once told us in a lecture that Prabhupada was writing books on this table. And there was a small insect around the lotus petal. So Prabhupada said, can't you see? She says, I know. See again? She will see. Well, take him out and throw him in the garden, the insect. And showed us how to respect each and every living entity, as you said.
Yeah, there's one other pastime. You watch those Prabhupada memories? All those DVDs, many DVDs, and all Prabhupada's disciples are talking about Prabhupada. So then one devotee, I can't remember his name, is Prabhupada's disciple, and he's in America, the early days, like that. And Prabhupada called him in. Prabhupada was sitting down behind his desk, and Prabhupada said, do you see that ant? So he looked on the desk, and he could not see any ant. And then he didn't know what to say to Prabhupada, because he thought if he says, yes, maybe Prabhupada is testing him, there wasn't an ant there. But he thought if he says no,
he can't say yes or no.
Yeah, he thought that maybe there's a spiritual ant there or something. So he didn't know what to say. So Prabhupada said, do you see that ant? He said, you know? He didn't know what to say. He said, Yes, no, mother. But Prabhupada said, my only purpose is to save that ant. He said, my only mission is to save that ant, to give him prasadam. So whether the ant was there or not, Prabhupada was making the point that every one of us has the mission to save all the living entities in the universe. So even an ant, Prabhupada was saying, it is our mission to save the ant. We should think like that. But that's advanced Krishna consciousness. Any other points?
If we do gardening, you know, we have to kill all these, you know, insects, killing plants, and, you know,
can't hear
the crops.
They can't hear you.
So when we do gardening, so we have to kill so many insects.
You mean because they're eating your flowers or your vegetables or something? So, the same at the farm, then we have to spray like neem. You know, we don't use chemicals. We use like neem or something like that. Because sometimes they will eat your...
The crops.
Yeah, they eat the crops or the flowers like that. So it's true. Yeah, we have to kill them like that. Because we're offering those flowers to Krishna, or we're taking that sabji, which then we offer to Krishna. So yeah, it's true. It says jiva, jiva jivasya jivanam. So in the scriptures, it says that. What is it?
Is an insect calling in the word dimak. What do you call it? Dimak? Dimak?
Beetle or something? Yeah, so the point is that we have to. Jiva jivasya jivanam means that in order to maintain your life, you have to take another life. So it means sometimes in the gardening, we don't have a choice. We have to spray them, but at least spray them with natural things. Don't spray them with chemicals, because that's not good for you. But spray them, like in the, at the farm, we sometimes spray neem, kill the insects, otherwise they come and they eat all the vegetables. So yeah, you have to do it to survive.
Like white ant, you know, they eat the good white ant.
Yes.
Termite.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have them at the farm. I mean, okay, that's a practical example. If the termites are eating your house, then you have to kill them.
Even possums. Possums.
The possums.
They eat everything.
Eat what?
The flowers, the birds, you know, the flowers, rose birds, everything. The leafy, whatever, you know, the fenugreek leaves.
Yeah, the possums come. Yeah. So what we do at the farm is that sometimes the possums come into the roofs of the houses. So Manigriva has a trap, like a big cage, but it's about that big, like a box, and the possum comes in, you put the food in there, it comes in, and then the cage catches. And then we drive maybe 2 kilometers from the farm, we let the possum go. So you should not kill, you should try to catch them and then...
I
searched eBay. I
found out that traps are available.
Yeah, so you just get a trap. Brinda will take care of it. So. You catch the possums? Or else you just get Brinda to stand out there all night next to the with a stick? You have to serve your mother. What will you eat? If the possum eats everything, what will you eat? So is your seva for your mother? You stand out there with the stick, and when the possum comes, then you hit the possum. Kick it. Yeah. Yeah, so you try not to kill them. Try to catch them. That's what we do at the farm. Even at the farm, when I first moved there, then we had a lot of mice coming in. So then we had to get a ahimsa trap. So, you know, like the mouse trap that...
Yeah.
Hits them and kills them. We didn't use that one. It's like a tunnel. They go in there and then it shuts behind them. And then it goes like this. It rocks. And then you know because they run up and down. And then it goes ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Then you know you've caught them. So in the middle of the night, I'd wake up because I hear this ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch like that. And then you have to take them outside. And the next day, you then take them somewhere and get rid of them. Try not to kill them if you can.
Is this the same with cockroaches?
Cockroaches.
Especially, there was an idea what they do is in the apartments. we have every 1 year, 6 months.
Kill all the cockroaches.
Yeah, I mean, you have to put everything in there.
Yeah. So, in some temples, when Prabhupada was here, Prabhupada would come, and they would have rat problem or cockroach problem in the temple, in the kitchen. And the devotees said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, should we kill the rats? And Prabhupada said, no, we should kill you. He said, because the reason the rats are coming is because everything is not clean. So it means that they're only coming if there's food. So it means if people are clean, they won't come. However, in places like Sydney, Sydney has a cockroach plague. Right, it's been there for 50 years kind of thing. There's so many cockroaches in Sydney. So even in the Sydney temple, there's so many cockroaches, even when everything's clean, still they come. So if they come after that, then you can kill them. Like otherwise, they crawl on the DVDs. And, you know, they do so many things.
Because they need a lot of eggs and then it just multiplies.
The point is, it has to be last resort, the final resort. Like, if you clean everything, then still if they come, then okay. But if it's just, you know, you're just being lazy. Then. Any other point?
My wife, for example, they wake me up at night. She finds, while looking after to see, she finds sometimes insects crawling. She carries them in a tissue paper, tells me to take it down and throw it in the garden.
Yeah, because at the farm we get a lot of, they call it daddy long legs. You know, in Australia we have that spider. It's like very skinny, like skinny legs. So at the farm we have a lot. So we have like a bug catcher. It's like a jar like that, and it's coming out the end, you go like that. So you just go and you get them, and then after a few days you get some, and then you just take them outside. Like that. So try not to kill things, that's the point. Last resort. Just like at the farm I kill the, what do you call them? Silverfish. You know,
yes,
so, do you have them?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they eat the clothes. Yeah, they eat clothes. Like they get into our clothes in the wardrobe and they eat everything. So at the farm, it's like we've tried everything, but they just do not disappear. You know, they don't like lavender, so we put lavender everywhere. You know, we put lemon, they don't like lemon. We put all natural things. But even still, they come. So if we see them, we kill them. Right? But it should be last resort. That's the point. After you've tried everything else, then you go. Any other point? TK? Okay. Thereafter, having divided the remaining food with his relatives, Runtidev was just about to eat his own share when a Shudra guest arrived. Seeing the Shudra in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Runtidev gave him also a share of the food.
Because King Runtidev saw everyone as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he never distinguished between the Brahmana and Shudra, the poor and the rich. Such equal vision is called Samadarshana, Pandita Samadarshana. One who has actually realized that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart and that every living being is part of the God. Does not make any distinction between the Brahmana and the Shudra, the poor man, the Ritra, and the rich Dhani. Such a person sees all living beings equally and treats them equally without discrimination.
Anything?
It is because we are upsetting their life cycle, but they are growing. If we kill them, then we are disrupting the revolution to higher.
Yeah. Like some of the trees, like in California, there's one tree called Californian Redwood. So that is the biggest tree on the earth. So they live for 5,000 years. So some of those trees were there when Krishna was here on the planet. So then if you cut one down, then he has to take birth again in that body. And then, so you're interfering with the natural evolution. So that's why it says we should not kill the living entities. Any other point?
We see the good, we must be sensitive. Probably the opportunity. Do you have any other? from Prabhupada makes clear that one actually is going to realize it first. Then,
yes. That's the symptom of self-realization. You see all the living entities. Good. Good. Okay. The points are the same, basically, in that. When the sudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, "O king, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat." With great respect, King Runti Dev offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs, who had come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained, and there was only enough to satisfy one person. But when the king was just about to drink it, a chandala appeared and said, "O king, although I am lowborn, kindly give me some drinking water." Aggrieved at hearing the pitiable words of the poor fatigued chandala, Maharaj Runti Dev spoke the following nectarian words. Sri Chaitanya.
Maharaj Runti Dev's words were like amrita or nectar, and therefore, aside from rendering bodily service to an adrift person, by his words alone, the king could save the life of anyone who might hear him.
So, what are the points here?
Words from the mouth of the elevated devotees always make that.
Good. Anything else?
Service by body, mind, and words.
Any other points?
Master Devotee told me that purity is force. So when sadhana is very good, and whatever you speak will touch the heart of the other person.
Anything else?
From the same point, the Siddha Prabhupada is pointing out the potency of the king, which great devotee can save anyone just by his sweet words or just by his words. So it's the devotee, if he thinks about the welfare of someone, he is obviously.
Any other points? So, of all forms of charity, to give sweet words to someone, that is the you say like the most precious gift. It actually says that if someone comes to your home, then you should offer them all facility. And it says if you cannot offer anything, at least offer them a seat. It says even a straw mat if you don't have anything, and some water, and the most important thing is sweet words. And Lord Brahma himself says, he is the first person in the universe, that if you offer someone sweet speech, that is the most satisfying thing to the heart. Even if you cannot offer anything else, but you offer very sweet words, the person will be satisfied. He'll be pacified. So, Krishna points out in the Bhagavad Gita, speech must have certain elements. So what are the elements of speech? Specifically it says in the mode of Buddha soul.
Pleasing,
yeah. So it has to have these elements. It has to be truthful. In other words, it has to be based upon Krishna consciousness. You cannot speak something which is outside of Krishna consciousness. It must be pleasing, which means it must satisfy the person. And it must benefit the person when you speak. And it should be based on Shastra also. That's a fourth element. So, we should always speak pleasing to people, except
if you're in a position of authority. If you're in a position of authority, then you don't always speak pleasing to others. Just like if you're a father or a mother, do you always speak pleasing to the kids? You know, the kids don't always like what you say. And your tone is not always pleasing. You know, because if you speak soft to the kids all the time, it's not good for the children. Sometimes you have to speak very heavily to them. Sometimes you have to correct them or chastise them. Does it ever happen to you, Brenda? Yeah, that's good. Sometimes we have to, like that. So also the guru means any authority. If someone's in a position of authority, sometimes they have to speak very strongly. And that is beneficial. And Prabhupada points that out. That is for the benefit. It is said in the Vedic literatures. If the father does not chastise the son or the children, and if the guru does not chastise the disciple, they do not develop good character. So they have to be corrected. So that is for the benefit of the person. So it is beneficial, it is truthful, it is based on Shastra. Pleasing, it is pleasing, but it may not be what we would normally call pleasing. But sweet speech we should offer to people in general. That should be our basic principle. And it states in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that whenever Lord Nityananda would speak, it was as sweet as nectar. Lord Nityananda would always speak very sweetly to everyone. So we should practice that as much as we can. And actually, I was at Mawulambar last week, and His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj, he lives on the farm. So my friend who I stayed with when I got there, Trayish Prabhu, then he massages Maharaj twice a week. So Maharaj always tells him pastimes about Prabhupada. And Mukunda Maharaj said that he was one of Prabhupada's first disciples. He joined in 1966. So he said that Prabhupada would always speak very respectfully to others. Always. Even his disciples did speak very respectfully. And Mukunda Maharaj said, I also try to do that. You have to speak respectfully. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada was very heavy on the disciples, but generally he would be very respectful. Even one time, like Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. If you go upstairs, you know Prabhupada's house? You've been to Prabhupada's house in Vrindavan? Have you been upstairs?
Yeah.
Upstairs, and Prabhupada's bathroom and his bedroom is there. They keep the Marathis and the Acharyas up there now. If you go up there. So one time, one of the Matajis, she was inside the bathroom cleaning Prabhupada's bathroom, and then Prabhupada walked in. And she was startled because Prabhupada walked into the bathroom. And Prabhupada said, oh, because he didn't realize she was in there. And Prabhupada said, oh, he said, can I come in? So Prabhupada was such a gentle person, a gentleman. He would always speak very sweetly. And Prabhupada stayed here in Melbourne one time. This is before we had this temple. He stayed down in, I think it was Brighton. So just down the coast there, not far, about 10, 15 minutes from the temple. Prabhupada stayed in one house. This is when we had the temple at Burnett Street, I think. St. Kilda, yeah. I think it was before, definitely before this. So Prabhupada stayed, there's one house that stayed in Brighton, I think. And they put sheets everywhere, all over the carpet, because it's an old house and it's old carpet, so they put sheets all through the house. And Prabhupada said several times when he was staying there, I think from memory, it might have been the mother of one of the devotees, or something, someone's house. And Prabhupada said several times while he stayed there for a few days, Prabhupada said, I apologize for the inconvenience. I know this must be an inconvenience to you having me stay here. And he apologized several times during those few days. Yeah. Sorry for the inconvenience. Like, you've gone to so much trouble for me. Like that. And they said, no, Prabhupada, there's no problem. But that was Prabhupada's move. Not that I am the Jagat Guru. Yeah, and I've come here to save everyone in Kali Yuga. But Prabhupada's move is very, you know, speak very sweetly. So we should also be like that. Be very grateful. Actually, it says gratitude is a function of intelligence. Bhagavad Gita says that. So we should be very grateful to others for what they do to us, do for us. So, any points? I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I want only to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf, so that they may be free from suffering.
Was it that I made a similar statement to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, requesting the Lord to liberate all living entities in His presence? Was it that submitted, and if they were unfit to be liberated, He Himself would take all their sinful reactions and suffer personally, so that the Lord might deliver them? A Vaishnava is therefore described as being paradukh-dukhi, very much aggrieved by the sufferings of others. As such, a Vaishnava engages in activity for the real welfare of human society.
So what are the points there?
The most important thing is the Krishna conscious movement proper the setup to give them the knowledge that we are pure spiritual souls and give it to by Krishna in the dark.
Good. Anything else?
We were elevated devotees' souls. Always have this principle of paradukkha-dukhi. Even when I was hearing a lecture from Adanyasi regarding Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's pastimes, he also had a similar, raised a similar request to Prabhupada, wherein he said, let all the calamities come in to me, and so that the rest of the world will be delivered. That's
the vision
or that's the mood of the elevation. We have to at least think about it and see what we could do.
Yeah. Anything else?
I was most impressed by Bhakti Deep Swami when he used to come to Melbourne Temple. The amount of kirtan he used to do, everybody was just jumping in ecstasy. He had to take out his coat.
And
he spread on the cake.
Anything else?
Great teacher.
Yeah, he was powerful. Okay. So, what is the basic principle of the devotee? Prabhupada says it, paradukha dukhi. Which personality was the most like that? It was Prabhupada himself. He was a complete emblem, right, of selflessness. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Bhagavatam is teaching us to become selfless. Ahoituki, apratihata, yayatma supersiddhati. Then you will be satisfied. You can only become satisfied when you are completely ahoituki. Ahoituki means you don't consider yourself, you know, but you're concerned with everyone else, how they're progressing in their Krishna consciousness. So you see that Runti Dev, he is showing that kind of principle, you know, to an extreme degree. But this is like the level of a Paramahamsa. And Prabhupada was also like that. Just like Brahmananda Prabhu, he passed away just a few months ago. So this is one of Prabhupada's first disciples. So Prabhupada was laying there in 1977. Prabhupada was laying on his bed in Vrindavan, emaciated. His body could not even lift up off the bed. And actually, remember in Prabhupada left in November.
November 77.
Yeah, in November. And then August, he went back to London. Right? He went back. So he went across. And Brahmananda Prabhu had to carry Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada couldn't even walk. He had to carry him. He picked him up and carried him to the car. And then when he got to the car, he took him out of the car at the airport and put him onto the plane. And Prabhupada couldn't even walk. He couldn't even stand. And then Prabhupada went over there to England. And it's interesting, actually, because the final tour, Prabhupada on the final tour, where was he going?
America.
Yeah, he went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and then he was on the way to America. He was doing a world tour. It was interesting. The final tour was only going to be to the farms. Not necessarily, that was the final tour. He left Vrindavan. He said he wouldn't leave, but he left. But it was only to go to the farms. He wanted to go to Gita Nagari, New Vrindavan. Only the farms. He wasn't even going to the city temples.
Because he said that was the only thing he had not fully established, was the farming communities. And even now, 35 years later, we still haven't established the farms. The farms are still just sitting there. Even our farm, just 200 acres, but not really much going on. Yeah, the Prabhupada wanted them to be, that's our mission in ISKCON. We still have to make the farms successful. So few farms in ISKCON are successful, most of them are not. So Prabhupada went, and then he came back because he got to London. He went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, celebrated his Vyasa Puja at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and then he came back. So he never went all the way around the world. When he got back to Vrindavan, then Prabhupada was so ill that he could not even sit himself up. And then Brahmananda Prabhu had a cold. He was a little bit sick. And then Prabhupada woke up, and Prabhupada said, "Who is that?" Brahmananda Prabhu was chanting, because they had 24-hour kirtan, softly. In the corner, one devotee would sit very softly, with small kantals, and chant 24 hours a day. And then Prabhupada woke up, and he said, "Who is that?" chanting. I said, "That is Brahmananda Prabhu." And he said, "Oh, Brahmananda." He said, "How are you feeling? I heard that you are not well." Mm-hmm. So that was Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Brahmananda started to cry. He's such a big devotee. And he said, "Because Prabhupada is dying, and he's asking me, how are you?" But that was Prabhupada's mood. And that's what it means to be a Vaishnava. It means you're not concerned about yourself. One time, because Brahmananda was big. You know Brahmananda Prabhu?
Yeah,
very, very tall and very big. He was actually very strong. So one time, he was walking after a class. Prabhupada gave class, and Prabhupada was walking back to his room. Brahmananda was on one side, and there's another devotee on another side. And Prabhupada was preaching to that devotee because he was asking questions. And then they were walking, and he said, "A devotee will do anything for Guru and anything for Krishna." And he said, "Just like Brahmananda, he will do anything for me." And he said, "If I tell him to kill you right now, he will do it." And the devotee started getting nervous. Yeah. And then Brahmananda, he was walking next to Prabhupada, and then he was telling the story. And years later, he was telling us the story. And he said, he's walking next to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, if I tell him, Brahmananda will kill you. So Brahmananda started thinking to himself, "Well, maybe I have to kill him now." So in his mind, he started preparing himself. "Well, okay, now I have to get rid of it." Because if Prabhupada says kill him, he would jump him. But Prabhupada was making a point. A devotee will do anything for Krishna, a devotee will do anything for the spiritual master. So a devotee is selfless. That's what the whole Bhagavatam is about, teaching us to be selfless. Yeah. And that's the way Prabhupada was. Prabhupada was completely selfless, actually.
Another point was, in Maravanar Chandantam, Prabhupada was dancing in sudden ecstasy. So many people, cops wanted to stop him, but he wouldn't stop.
In
Marble Arch in London?
In London.
The theater.
Yeah.
I saw the play there.
Yeah, he was in front of the Ratha Yatra and he was dancing. And Prabhupada kept stopping. And they made a agreement with the police that they would keep the Ratha Yatra moving. And Prabhupada kept stopping. It was blocking up London. And then one of the police came and they said to the devotee, "Go and tell him to keep moving." And the devotee said, "You have to tell him."
That's right.
No one wanted to go to Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was in ecstasy. No one wanted to. Even the police didn't want to go and say anything to him. So they said to the devotees, "Go and please ask him to keep moving." The Prabhupada just kept stopping.
Ecstatic.
Yeah, he's in ecstasy. But then after the Ratha Yatra, he said to the devotees, "Did you see Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda dancing in front of the cart?"
Yeah.
And the devotee said, "No." And the Prabhupada said, "Oh." By offering my water to maintain the life of this poor Chandala, who is struggling to live, I have been freed from all hunger, thirst, fatigue, trembling of the body, moroseness, distress, lamentation, and illusion. Having spoken thus, King Rantidev, although on the verge of death because of thirst, gave his own portion of water to the Chandala, without hesitation, for the king was naturally very kind and sober. Demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who can satisfy all materially ambitious men by giving them the rewards they desire, then manifested their own identities before King Rantidev, for it was they who had presented themselves as the Brahmana, Shudra, Chandala, and so on. King Rantidev had no ambition to enjoy material benefits from the demigods. He offered them obeisances, but because he was factually attached to Lord Vishnu, Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he fixed his mind at Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. O Maharaj Parikshit, because King Rantidev was a pure devotee, always Krishna conscious and free from all material desires, the Lord's illusory energy, Maya, could not exhibit herself before him. On the contrary, for him, Maya entirely vanished, exactly like a dream. So the Bhagavatam tells us in the very opening verse that we must learn to distinguish between reality and illusion. Because reality is Krishna. Reality is the spiritual world, to be with Krishna. And illusion is Maya, is material energy. So a devotee, he understands the difference between Maya and Krishna, which means reality and illusion. Yeah. So we only suffer in this material world because of identifying with the material energy. The King Rantidev, he understood everything is temporary in this material world. So he was not worrying about himself. And that's the reason why we worry about ourselves in this material world. That's why we're so absorbed in ourselves, what we will get. And people fight over material possessions. I want this, I want that. And then two people, you see like the children, they do it all the time. One kid wants the toy, and then the other kid comes and grabs it, and then the big fight comes. Because they both want to play with that thing. And that's what people are like in this material world. Adults are like that. They fight over material things. But one who is Krishna conscious, he understands this is illusion. Everything is temporary. So Rantidev understood that everything is temporary, so I should feed these other people, not worry about myself. Krishna will look after me, but let me look after the other people. So it is a perfect example of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so any other points?
Okay. How do you think charity purify us?
Yeah, we discussed that last night. You were there last night? Yeah. Yeah, last night we discussed that point. You become purified by charity. Grihasthas have to give charity. Grihasthas don't become purified when they don't give charity. It's necessary. Give as much as you can. As much as is possible. Okay. So, when is the open book exam? What was that date? 19th. Okay, so October the 19th, your open book exams are due. After that, I won't accept them because then I have to go to India, so I can't get them too late. So, 19th will be the open book exam, and oral presentation should be done by the 19th also. And then the closed book exam will be around about that time also. We only have a few more chapters to go. So, next 3-4 weeks, we'll finish the 9th canto. And also keep up with your fees as well for the course. Try to a lot of devotees are a long way behind. So try to make that up also. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.